everybody. Welcome to episode 580 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an Aftershock Monday episode. I'm going to be talking about a couple of the books that come out this Wednesday, November 7th. I'm also going to tell you about a new series that Aftershock just announced. I believe it comes out in February, if I'm not mistaken. And I also want to mention that I plan on covering Animosity, the first volume, in this episode tonight, but I decided not to do that because when I went back and read it, I was so impacted by just how different it is. And I think being that Animosity has been around for about 3 years now, I feel like the buzz has kind of worn off. And it's a real shame because this book continues to be extremely, extremely good. And going back and reading those first issues over again with the context of having had it around for a few years and, you know, having read the title and also the politics and the sort of mirroring of the real world that is going on in Animosity Evolution, which is over on the other coast in San Francisco, with all that context, it really strengthens the narrative that is in this first volume and these first four issues of the original series. And so because of that, I decided I wanted to do a little bit of a deeper dive. I wanted to read it one more time before I talk about it. And what I'm really hoping is that I'm going to have Marguerite Bennett on to talk about those first four issues, to talk about kind of the impetus of the series. And I think it'll ultimately be a more powerful episode. And if we can get Marguerite on to give her insights, I think it'll just make for a better episode and be a lot of fun and really enlightening. So I decided to hold off on that for now. I can't remember if I mentioned it last Aftershock Monday that I was planning on covering Animosity Volume 1 or not. My original thinking in covering it was I think it would make a great Christmas gift for a lot of people that love story, right? You don't have to love comics to dive into this book and read it and love it and understand it. You know, if you like things like The Walking Dead, if you're into horror movies, if you're into like the Planet of the Apes type movies, I mean, there's a lot of different genres that this is playing with. It's such a crossover title, and really easy to read. Good artwork from Rafael de la Torre. So again, I think it, with the holidays coming up, I thought it was a good time to cover Animosity Volume 1. But again, with some further thought and reflection on the volume, I just thought, you know what, I'm going to reach out to Marguerite. She's been on the show before. She's a friend, and see if she wants to come on and talk about it. So we can do it right, basically. And really give all you listeners an incentive to get out there and purchase Volume 1 for a friend or a relative this holiday season. So it's going to come up soon. I'll let you know. I'm going to reach out to Marguerite this week. So by next week, I should have a good idea of when we can make that happen. But in the meantime, I'm going to start off this episode by talking about that new title that got announced this week that I mentioned. It's called Stronghold. It's from writer Phil Hester, who a lot of you will know as an artist, but he's handling the writing chores on this title. The art is actually by Ryan Kelly. We have colors by Dee Cuniff, letters by Simon Bolin. And this is a title, and again, Aftershock really choosing something different and off the wall and original. And it just goes to show how a lot of creators, I think, are waking up to the idea that if you have a crazy off-the-wall idea that you really are passionate about and you want a yes, you know, as far as getting it made, take it to Aftershock. It's a company that's willing to take risks, and a lot of those risks are paying off. So this is a really interesting story. It's about the concept that our planet isn't really a planet, but it's actually a prison that's designed both as a trap and a shelter for an alien entity, alien in the sense that it's not, you know, original to our world, but an elder god who's amnesic and doesn't realize just how powerful he is. And he's living an everyday life as your run-of-the-mill insurance underwriter in the Midwest. And there is a heroine who's a student and a delivery driver. Her name is Claire. And she falls in love with this insurance adjuster. And what's interesting about Claire is she's actually a member of a centuries-old secret society called the Stronghold, which is the name of the series. So she's a member of this secret society, and the secret society is aware that this insurance adjuster is this immortal elder god. And their whole reason for being, the whole reason this secret society called the Stronghold exists, is to make sure that this elder god, this Michael Gray, as he's known in his human form, never regains his memories, never regains his power, right? So what happens when you get this girl who's part of this centuries-old secret society and doesn't necessarily buy into all these teachings, right? It's like she's been raised in this quote-unquote religion, this cult, and feels constricted by this faith that she's supposed to follow. And she doesn't, I mean, this guy just appears to be a regular old insurance adjuster, right? Just a regular old run-of-the-mill, nothing special. But somehow she has these romantic feelings for him. She's bristling against the constraints of her faith or her cult or whatever you want to call it, the way she sees it. And so she tests the boundaries of things by revealing herself and revealing what she knows about both Michael Gray, the insurance adjuster, and herself. And that leads to Pandora's box being open, right? Like, what happens then? And the fact that once you do that, once you've revealed the destiny of this elder god to the god himself, now what, right? And Hester himself loved the idea of balancing this romantic story of these two kind of star-crossed lovers, people you wouldn't necessarily expect to fall in love with each other, but the love is very real. And he's balancing that against the fact that if this love is to exist and to blossom and to grow, it means the destruction of the world, of the earth, right? So is it worth that? Like, how much is true love really worth? Again, Hester was talking about how he really dug into the idea of hidden destiny stories, King Arthur and the Prydain Chronicles and all that. It's like we all, I think, as kids, kind of dream that we're part of something more than we are, and they're really powerful fantasies. But what if it can be more than just wish fulfillment or these power fantasies? And it ends up being a tale of be careful what you wish for, because so often in those stories, our heroes find out, or our protagonists find out, they are really part of something more than they are, but it ends up coming at a price, right? They give up anonymity, or they give up the ability to have less responsibility. All of a sudden, the weight of the world is on their shoulders. So there is some sacrifice that you make. Well, what if the sacrifice that you make is not a sacrifice for yourself, a personal sacrifice, but a sacrifice for everybody else, right? What if you pull the sword from the stone, and not only does it come with crushing responsibility for your own life, but what if all life is affected? What if all life has to pay that price? It's an interesting question, right? Like, does it become worth it? Is it worth it to claim your true identity if you're going to destroy the old identity that you were living and were actually happy as, right? Like, if you had that choice, you know, kind of like the Matrix, red pill, blue pill, right? we even see Cypher at the end saying, if I knew the truth, I would have told him to take that red pill and shove it up his ass, right? Because the reality was nowhere near as good as what the fantasy was, right? So, like I said, it's ticking all the boxes. It seems like a really, really great story, a really, really fun story. I can't wait to check it out. And I've seen some of the artwork from Ryan Kelly. It's absolutely outstanding. And even Phil Hester himself, as an artist, has said, man, Ryan Kelly's absolutely killing on this book. So really looking forward to checking out Stronghold, and hopefully we'll be able to have Phil and or Ryan on before the first issue drops to tell us more in detail about it. So that's coming up in February. We don't have I take that back. We do have an on sale date. It's February 20th of 2019. And then I did mention I wanted to talk about a couple of the Aftershock titles that are coming out this week. First, we have Volition number 3 from writer and creator Ryan Parrott. Art is by Omar Francia. We have letters by Marshall Dillon. And this is the story about robots that have intelligence, so that are artificial intelligence, but it doesn't happen like it happens in the Terminator or all those other movies, as they postulate and AI wants to destroy us. It turns out that when robots gain sentience, they're just like the rest of us. They just want to have a family. They just want to be happy. But there's a conspiracy going on that we discovered in the first issue. And one of our main characters, Amber, stumbles upon that conspiracy and is immediately set for decommission. And she's rescued by Hale, a construction robot who has kind of outlived his usefulness, because that's the thing with these new robots, right? Like, so they have sentience, they have intelligence, which means they can't be upgraded without, it would literally be killing them. It would be murder to upgrade them. And it's really expensive. So everybody wants the latest and greatest, but what do you do with the old models that can't grow and can't evolve anymore, but have sentience and have awareness? And so it's almost like they're creating an underclass by continuously producing new robots with higher levels of intelligence and such. So it's I encourage you to go back and listen to the interview we did with Brian Parrott about the big ideas of Volition. It's really fascinating. And in issue 3 that comes out this week, we get Hale returning to his gang, and the reception is not exactly what he hopes it would be. And we also see that the two cops that are on the trail of Amber T are starting to put the puzzle pieces together. They're starting to realize that, hey, maybe everything isn't quite as it seems. And so that is interesting as well. The other thing that I'll mention is on the first couple of pages, we get some hints and some clues into the birth of artificial intelligence, which is interesting. And I point that out because then on the very last page in the foreground, we see a chess set, which is very interesting. This chess set is in Amber 7T's apartment. And the reason it's so significant is because in those first couple pages, when we're looking at the birth of AI, we see a human playing chess with that AI. And so I got to imagine that, you know, on the first page, we're seeing robots play chess. On the last page, we see a robot with a chess set right there in her apartment. And so is that the same chess set? Like, what's the connection, right? Is Amber 7T's lineage such that it goes back to that first AI? I guess it remains to be seen. What I didn't do is I didn't go back and look at that very first chess set at where the pieces were on the board as a contrast to where they are on Amber's board. So maybe it's just a way to commemorate when AI first became aware. I'm not sure, but what I am sure of is it's not just there as a throwaway. Again, it's on the first page. It shows up on the last page. It's got to mean something. So kudos to the entire creative team. Omar Francia is a revelation in his art. I was really hoping to talk to him at New York Comic Con, but we couldn't make it happen. But hoping to have him on soon, and the artwork is spectacular. And I especially want to point out the fact that Omar has to give facial expressions to robots, because a lot of this is talking head type of comics. But he's able to give facial expressions even to robots that allow you to see the emotion and to see what the robots are feeling, which is really incredible when you stop and think about it. So Volition is quickly climbing the ranks, and I'm sure it's going to crack my top five for Aftershock Comics very, very soon, because it's been absolutely spectacular. So be sure you're picking it up this Wednesday. All right, next book I'm going to talk about that comes out this Wednesday is Moth and Whisper, number 3, from writer Ted Anderson and co-creator and artist Jen Hickman, with letters by Marshall Dillon. And this is telling the story of a genderqueer child of two master thieves in a city in the future, which is kind of a fascist state, right? Like everything is recorded. There's no privacy. Your identity is constantly being photographed and used and recorded. And these master thieves, the Moth and the Whisper, kind of belie that. And Nikki, their gender queer child, belies that as well, as she or he or they, I should say, attempts to find out where their parents went and why are they missing. And so we saw in last issue, Nikki made an unlikely alliance. And in this issue, they take advantage of that alliance and attempt to infiltrate an enemy, a supposed enemy of their parents. And this is basically the person that their parents had told them, if we ever go missing, this is who you need to go and ask questions of. And that would be the Wolf, who apparently is in charge of the underground in this city of the future that Nikki lives in. So things are not necessarily what they seem. I love the balance that Ted and Jen are striking in telling a story of a character who just so happens to be genderqueer. It's not necessarily a focus, but there are times when they do give it focus, and they do give it that idea of voice, which I think is just great, to the point where in an extremely meta way, Nikki has a conversation with the rival's son about the rival's like, I don't even know what your face looks like. I don't know if you're a he or a she. And Nikki's response is, you don't have to refer to me as a him or her. You can refer to me as a them, because I'm genderqueer. Like, she comes right out and says it, which is great. I mean, the fact that you can just come right out and say it in this world that Nikki lives in, without fear of reprisal. And, her partner here in crime, who is the son of one of the enemies of her parents that she was able to recruit last issue. He even apologizes. He's like, "Oh, sorry, I didn't know." And Nikki, for their part, is like, "At least you asked, right? It's okay. At least you asked." And that's the whole thing, right? Like, you don't have to be beat over the head with it. It comes naturally in the story, but enough to where it stood out to me, maybe because I'm a little more aware of that, those kind of things these days. But again, it's a message that needs to be out there, but the danger is to get preachy, or you're hitting people over the head with it, and then it loses some of its luster. So I think it's a great job by Ted and Jen to slip it into the story and have it be a story point and a plot point, but not the plot point, not the point of the story. And I think if you go back and listen to the interview that I did with Ted and Jen about a month ago, a little over a month ago, about the story, that should come through. So I'm fully invested in the story. The fact that Nikki is genderqueer is completely incidental to me. Honestly, I don't really care. It is an interesting facet of the character, because they are constantly changing identities, and the whole idea of discovering your true self and finding your identity obviously plays out in the book itself. But I guess what I'm saying is, the fact that Nikki is genderqueer, it isn't a detriment to the story. it does add to the story, but it doesn't necessarily seem like it's a focal point of the story. It's not, when I read it, it's not forefront in my mind. What's forefront in my mind is the mission that Nikki has set for herself: find their parents, rescue their parents, take advantage of all the lessons their parents have taught them, and that's what's interesting to me, rather than any kind of, you know, gender fluidity or whatever. I could really care less. So I think it's a great book. The art that Jen Hickman is doing really suits the story that her and Ted are telling, and I think it's a really great title. I hope everybody's picking it up. So I think that's going to do it for this episode. So once again, I want to thank everybody for joining. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. All past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. And I'm done with conventions for this year, but I'll be planning my 2019 convention schedule soon. So if there's a convention close to where you live and you want me to make an appearance, let the convention organizers know, let me know, and I'll see what I can do. I always love to get out to conventions I haven't been before. So once again, I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.